Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%, APR 4.08%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 1.25% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report for today, Monday, October 28th, 2019. The Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Websites for the truth include, but are not limited to, HagmanReportLive.com. That is HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you get all of the video and audio sourced for this show. We, of course, we're going to be expanding our platforms in addition to what we've already done. We're going to be on Roku pretty soon. Just let you know, thank you for your support. Everyone who supports this broadcast, we really appreciate it because you are the stakeholders in this broadcast. And I want to thank each and every one of you for that. Also, HagmanReport.com. So HagmanReportLive.com and HagmanReport.com. It's Monday. Eric the Tech, how are you today?
Good. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Happy Monday to everyone. You know, Monday thoughts. I was digging in Eric the Tech's brain for his thoughts this morning, and I'll tell you what, things are going well. How is Dean? How's Dean? How is Theo? The lady's adopted dog.
He's good. He got a haircut.
Theo did. I'll tell you what a great little guy. And of course, I've got a picture. I think I posted it with him with sunglasses on, and of course, my just darling grandson Dean. If you go to my Twitter account, Doug Hagman, I think it is Douglas Hagman Twitter account, whatever it is, I've got a picture. I think it's on that Twitter account. I got a picture of Dean and Theo sitting looking out the looking outside. It was taken, I think, earlier this year. It's pretty cool. Anyway, a lot of news to get into today. Of course, over the weekend, al-Baghdadi, the cowardly POS that he is, was assumed room temperature in pieces. That's this according to the White House. And of course, it was interesting how the left had taken that news. Yes, I know he was pronounced. I mean, how many times do people have to be pronounced dead, right? I know all the backstory. I know the backstories. I know and I know the current meme about, well, this is just takeaway from, you know, the president's impeachment, looming impeachment. Well, okay, it is what it is. It's news, right? Speaking of impeachment, impeachment witness Bill Taylor led Ukraine delegation for group advised by Hunter Biden. This is on Breitbart. It's the number one story on Breitbart this morning. I'm not sure where it's at today. But the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Bill Taylor, who provided key testimony now to the left's controversial impeachment inquiry last week, he led, now listen to this, he led an election observation delegation in Ukraine earlier this year for, you guessed it, a George Soros-funded organization that at the time boasted Hunter Biden on its very small chairman's council. There it is on your screen. Now, can we get any more obvious than what we're seeing here? Can we get any more obvious than the incestuous nature of the politics of the swamp? And this, of course, leads to another story on Breitbart. Trump shifts biggest leaker in Washington. Of course, we know that what is taking place behind closed doors, ostensibly for security reasons, which none of this is for national security, is being selectively leaked out after being molded and shaped to the various newspapers, so the Washington Post, New York Times, and such. So understand, we are getting second, third-hand information, but it's molded in the shape of that man right there, Adam Schiff. He is deciding how to and what to leak, how to leak it, and what the spin should be. So the media, oh my goodness, the media, the fifth column in the United States. Now, and there's a lot of looming headline news. Of course, we can get into the obvious things. When President Donald Trump went to the World Series Game 5 yesterday. Hey, did you see that game? Did you watch that game, Eric the Tech?
I watched some of it.
All right. Did you see the part where Donald Trump went out and or was recognized on the big jumbo screens?
When he was in his booth next to Melania?
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, I think so.
Chance of lock him up broke out. Well, that developed into a meme on Twitter. And it's amazing. Folks, do you find it amazing that we've gone from lock her up, the call for the inquiry, a serious legal inquiry, investigation into Hillary Clinton and the Clintons, to this, to lock him up? I'm more concerned today, not about the actions of President Donald Trump and historically, but I'm more concerned today about the reactions of the base, that is the vocal base, that is propelling the left, or that is the left that is propelling the media and the various memes on social networks. The one thing, and here's the essence of my opening hour today. It's built around, opening hour today is built around Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, because they are certainly the darlings of the left, and I would not count Hillary Clinton out. But the one thing that I'm seeing all across the board, and we've talked about this, we've had guests talking about this, is that there will be people, politicians and supporters of President Donald Trump who will come on and say, you know what, it's a lock. The 2020 elections are a lock. Donald Trump has got it. He can beat anyone. That's a very, at least in my view, that's a very dangerous position or posture to take. And I've talked to a couple of people inside and outside of Washington who are beginning to say, you know what, we better be paying attention to this. Now, Donald Trump is, in my view, he's a master at dealing with people. He's at his best when he's not prompted by teleprompters. And many people will say, well, no, that's when he's at his worst, and that's when he makes the most gaffes and stuff. But that's the guy who we elected, isn't it? That's the genuine Donald Trump. It's that guy who's free to speak his mind. He's free to say, you know what, you're a nutbag. You know, he's free to say, boy, are you off base? Or when he tweeted out human scum, okay, no filters. But you know what? I don't want to filter. Aren't we tired of the politics as usual? I'm just asking this. Because what he's gone up against, and if you think about this, what he's gone up against every single day of his presidency, really every single day since he announced his candidacy, has been the Leviathan intelligence community, the intelligence apparatus. Not just domestically, but internationally. There is an article by Lee Smith on The Federalist. It headlined this morning, dated today, of course, the title of which is How the Obama Administration Set in Motion Its Coup against Trump. Now, this is from a book by Lee Smith. This article is written by Lee Smith. This is by a book by Lee Smith, which is coming out tomorrow, titled The Plot Against the President: The True Story of How Congressman Devin Nunes Uncovered the Biggest Political Scandal in U.S. History. Now, I would argue that the biggest political scandal, this is certainly it. It's more of a crime than a scandal, I would argue. But how will history, how will this be shaped in history? And I would suggest everyone read this. Now, I would also assert that the coup against President Trump began not after he became the 45th president of the United States, but when he descended the escalator, and maybe even before he descended the escalator. Just to go over a couple of important dates, I just want to tick off a couple of dates that I think everyone should kind of put in there. If you've got a notebook or something, these are some key dates that I would really suggest everyone mark down. Number one, July 23rd of 2014. Important date. The House Select Committee on Benghazi reaches an agreement with the State Department to produce the Clinton emails relevant to their investigation. Remember, the emails came out of the Benghazi investigation. The second day, the following day, Clinton IT aide Paul Combetta, now he had an alias, his alias on the internet was Stone Tear, requests assistance on Reddit for deleting VIP email addresses. You remember that? Paul Combetta is in the thick of all of this, and his activities should not be minimized. October 15th of 2014, the Hillary Clinton, and well, the Clinton team, instructed Datto, D-A-T-T-O. That's the company that took over the servers from Platte River Networks. They instructed Datto to begin purging emails from their backup storage devices. But you know what? That never happened. Whoops. Oopsie. Jumping to 2015, March 2nd of 2015, news that Hillary Clinton exclusively used a private email server for official State Department business is disclosed to in the New York Times. Remember that headline, New York Times headline? That's when it became public, March 2nd of 2015. There's a reason I'm giving you all of this background information. The next day, March 3rd of 2015, Clinton aides call Platte River Network Networks, which operated the Clinton email server, to confirm that all emails were deleted per their 2014 order. Now, maybe I misrepresented here. Datto and Platte River Networks were, there was overlap in some concurrent activity there. Okay. One in New Jersey, one in Colorado, Platte River in Colorado. The physical servers in New Jersey. There were actually two different servers, a main server and a backup server, but I digress. March 9th, Clinton associate Terry McAuliffe met with Andrew McCabe, his wife Jill, to encourage her to run for office. Now, you've got a political operative in the form of Terry McAuliffe, closely tied with the Clintons, urging Jill McCabe, Andrew McCabe's wife, Andrew McCabe, of course, within the FBI, DOJ, to run for her office. A few days later, it was on March 12th of 2015, Jill McCabe said, okay. And she announced her candidacy for the state Senate in Virginia. Now, at the end of March of 2015, Paul Combetta comes, you know, comes back up again, Clinton IT specialist. He realized, suddenly realized he didn't delete all of the emails that he was supposed to, all of Clinton's emails. So he used on that day, beginning on that day, he used BleachBit, that computer program BleachBit, that software to do so. Now that was on March 31st of 2015. Now these are important dates to keep in mind because remember, this is pre-Donald Trump. On April 29th of 2015, the FBI warned Andrew McCabe about the potential conflicts of interest he had with respect to his wife's campaign, and McCabe ignored the warnings. On the 19th of May of 2015, Department of Justice official Peter Kadzik, using his private or his personal email account, sent an email to John Podesta, who was Clinton's campaign manager, to warn him about a House investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. Now, remember, you're talking well over the course of several months here, from the original order to destroy emails, which were not done, through, okay, I finally did it, through, hey, John Podesta, hey, it's Peter Katzik from the Department of Justice. Just letting you know, the FBI is fixing on, or they're conducting an investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. On the 24th of June, 2015, the discovery of classified information on Clinton's private email server was announced. The matter is then referred to the FBI. And that's where the springboard effect took place. Now, you have to understand, there has been a quarter of a century history between the FBI and the Clintons. Okay? This is, oh my goodness, how can people forget about this? Over the weekend, I was talking with a friend of mine, again, with it at the periphery of the Donald Trump administration. I don't want to overstate the person's position. I did ask if I could have him come on the air, or if he'd like to come on the air, and he declined. He said, you know, no. With all the people taking to the airwaves, please, no, just keep me out of it. It was fine. But we spoke for probably pretty close to an hour about the various things, all the way back to the Clintons in Arkansas to the present day. And he reminded me of something. In fact, a mutual friend, and maybe for me to say he's my friend, it would overstate the relationship. He's an acquaintance, Doug Weed, presidential historian Doug Weed. As a matter of fact, worked for a number of presidential administrations, presidential historian. In fact, he worked with George H.W. Bush and the George H.W. Bush White House. Now, I know about the history of George H.W. Bush. Where you have to understand, at least I believe this, when you paint people with a broad brush, well, if you work with George H.W. Bush, that means he's a globalist, that means he's a baby eater, and, you know, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Now, any more than somebody you hire to put in your brick driveway or walkway, you know, is a satanic Freemason. You can't paint people with a broad brush like that, but I digress. Anyway, Doug Weed, presidential historian, wrote the book Game of Thorns. Now, if you haven't read this book, it's a marvelous book. I had spent some time, met Doug Weed back in the late 80s, and he's just a heck of a nice guy. And I've heard his speeches and such. I have got a 10-minute video interview that Doug Weed granted RT. And of course, you might think, well, RT, that's a Russian arm of Russian propaganda. Look, he could have said this on CNN, Fox, or MSNBC. It doesn't matter. He said what he said. And he brings up several important points during this 10-minute interview. And I would like everyone to listen to this. I think this is perhaps one of the most critically important and long forgotten points of history about the Clintons and about really how we got to where we are today, especially with respect to Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, what happened in the 90s with the Clinton presidency, what happened in the early 2000s with the Clinton Senate, being the senator from New York, and what happened as with her as Secretary of State. Because it was through really 25 years. Prior to that as First Lady, right? And Bill Clinton as president. So you've had, and even before that, Bill Clinton as governor of Arkansas, along with Hillary as First Lady of Arkansas. And then before that, even with the Arkansas Attorney General. But the reason I bring this up is what we're seeing today really reflects a quarter of a century of history with the FBI. And it's not a pleasant history. And this particular, at least in my view, this particular 10-minute interview offers some great grounding insight into what we have seen and what we should be paying attention to in terms of the SOP, the standard operating procedure of the left, because this to me reflects it all. So if you don't mind, go ahead and hit this interview, folks. It's 10 minutes long. Please pay attention to this. Doug Weed, great guy. Here it is.
Welcome, everybody, to Watching the Hawks. I am Tyrell Ventura.
I'm Tabitha Wallace.
I'm Sean Stone.
And joining us, so just what did end up causing Hillary Clinton's epic defeat this past November? Was it Russian hacking? Was it connections to Goldman Sachs, entrenched sexism, or just a badly run campaign? Well, today on Watching the Hawks, presidential historian and author of the new book Game of Thorns, the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and the new administration's winning strategy, Doug Weed enters the Hawks Nest to provide his insight into what led to Clinton's downfall. Thank you so much for joining us
today.
Thank you.
Now, as I was saying earlier, you know, all we've heard about is Russian hacking and Russian hacking and Russian hacking and more Russian hacking. But is Vladimir Putin and Russia really the ones responsible for Hillary Clinton's loss in November? In your research, what do you think truly cost Hillary this election?
Yeah, I don't think anybody seriously thinks that, but it's good talking points. At first, it was Jim Comey, if you'll remember.
Right.
It was Jim
yes.
Comey. And of course, nobody thought that either. But there was a 27-year war between the Clintons and the FBI. So Jim Comey's decision was not made in a vacuum. It was made because FBI agents in St. Louis and California offices and Louisiana offices in Arkansas, in New York, had been pursuing the Clintons over all kinds of shenanigans for years. So in fact, Jim Comey himself investigated Bill Clinton when he pardoned Mark Rich and came to the conclusion he's probably guilty, but it can't be proved. So it was a refrain that he's repeated in his mind over the years to the FBI. So no, it was overwhelmingly Hillary Clinton's election to win. She outspent him 8-1, if you count the PAC money. Yep. She had the largest PAC in American history that not only raised but spent the most. She had a ground game. Her staff was 5-1 over Trump's. And then her ground game of volunteers, 960,000 volunteers on the ground.
That's a lot.
So she had 249 newspapers endorse her. He had 19.
Wow.
She had Hollywood. She had academia. She had corporate America. She had Wall Street. But Donald Trump had $1 billion of earned media. It was positive and negative. And I had sources in the Clinton campaign, I had sources in the Trump campaign, I'd call the people in the Trump campaign and I'd say, you're off message, tweet, you're what? They say, no, we aren't. We say, yes, what's the and their explanation was, we're on message, you just don't understand the message. The message is, number one, make America great again, let's get her jobs back. And the second message is, I'm not a politician.
Right.
And when there are rough edges, when there are weird things that happen, you're only reinforce, you know, I could do better than that. He's not a politician.
That's interesting. That's pretty fascinating.
One of the biggest complaints from states like Wisconsin, which is my home state, and one of the complaints of voters there over and over and over that I keep hearing is that she just didn't show up. And that's really what they're prevailing, you know, answer to what who to vote for was, is that she didn't show up, she didn't campaign there herself. Do you think that, you know, what possible good reason for the Clinton campaign to have had for her not to be in Wisconsin?
Because they thought they were going to win Wisconsin, and so they didn't need to go there, and it was driving Bill Clinton crazy. Bill Clinton would call her on the phone, he'd say, you're losing the Catholic vote, which is a prominent vote in Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan. He tried to get her to go to Notre Dame University in South Bend, Indiana to speak on St. Patrick's Day. She wouldn't do it. And then the memos came out, the emails came out that the Clintons were planning, after they won the election, their campaign was going to co-opt the Catholic Church and use the Catholic Church to change their doctrine. They called it a Catholic Spring. so they would help update the doctrines of the Catholic Church. Well, it's one thing to the separation of church and state to say, you know, you Christians and Catholics and Muslims shouldn't get involved in politics. It's something else for politicians to say, we're going to take over your church. So Bill Clinton was saying to his wife, you've got to get out front of this. You've got to speak up. You've got to say something to correct this. She wouldn't do it. She was afraid it'd call too much attention to it. So he was furious. There's one scene in my book, Game of Thrones, where he takes his phone after talking to Hillary, and he's so mad that he throws it off the rooftop of his pad at the presidential library in Little Rock, Arkansas. So that was part of it in those states.
That's interesting.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Well, one thing that we've heard a lot about in the alternative media in particular is the Clinton Foundation. A lot of allegations of money laundering, fraud, outright fraud. Now they're going to close down the Clinton Global Initiative, right? So what should people know about the Clinton Foundation, and why didn't it make it into the election cycle?
Oh, there's so much to talk about with the Clinton Foundation, but one of the more intriguing stories that I came across was Gilbert Shoghari, the story that you never see on TV. It was completely covered up because it's embarrassing. But he is the owner of massive hotels in Nigeria, and Nigeria depends, the U.S. State Department under Hillary Clinton would not declare them a terrorist organization. The FBI encouraged them to, the CIA encouraged them to, the Barack Obama White House encouraged them to. She wouldn't do it. And that on shows on all the major networks, you'd hear anchors saying, what's the deal? What's the problem with the Boko Haram? Why won't she declare them a terrorist organization? Well, now we found out that Gilbert Shoghari, who owns all these great hotels, had given $1 million to the Clinton Foundation.
What a surprise.
So what's amazing was all during the election, you'd hear people say, yes, people donated to the Clinton Foundation, but there's no quid pro quo.
Right.
And then after the election, you had this bizarre moment where Boeing comes out and says, okay, we want to make these $10 billion Air Force One, and Donald Trump says, wait a second. You gave $1 million to the Clinton Foundation. Yeah, you gave $2 million for the World Fair in China. Right. You maxed out your giving of all your executives to Hillary Clinton. Hmm. You bet on the wrong horse. She didn't win. This is the corruption's over. If you want government money, you come in with a good bid on time, and we'll talk about it.
We have a couple of minutes. I just want to ask you one last thing. That's what you're here for. I don't want us to run out.
No.
That's why you're here. One of the things I do want to quick before we run out of time is one of the more interesting things, I think probably one of the most interesting things in your book is a segment that covers the now largely forgotten scandal involving the Democratic Party and the Chinese American businessman Johnny Cheung. Cheung allegedly in a plea agreement during a plea agreement in Bill Clinton's 1996 re-election bid that he was funneling hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Chinese government into the re-election campaign. Can you give us, you know, a minute or two we have, what is this story and why wasn't this a bigger deal? This seems to me a huge issue.
It's a huge deal. And the other thing to keep in mind is it's current. Niglap Singh, who wired $1 million to the fry cook in the back of a Chinese restaurant in Little Rock, Arkansas, a guy who makes fried wontons, so he could turn around and give $600,000 to the Clintons, which they had to refund. Your viewers can Google all this to see that it's true. He showed up, Niglap Singh, on the streets of Manhattan in 2016 in the middle of the election. The FBI arrested him. They went to his hotel. They found suitcases full of cash. They wanted to investigate, what is this? Are they doing it again? Is China trying to influence the election by buying off Hillary Clinton? And the FBI in Washington said, nope, we're not going into that. You know, she's going to be our boss in 2 months. We're not going to get into that. So it's an ongoing story, but it explains a lot of the headlines. You see establishment figures pushing us into conflict with Russia. Mm-hmm. Do you know why? Because you can't take, as an American, you can't take on Russia and China at the same time. And they're alarmed when Donald Trump is talking about, we're going to change things with China. We've had this tremendous transfer of wealth to China. We need jobs. We need to do something. There are people who are making a lot of money off China, and they are pushing us towards conflict with Russia to protect this, stop Trump from doing his thing in China. That's that's my opinion, but you can read the details.
You can see it all in the book, Game of Thrones. Yeah, Game of Thrones, a really fascinating book, and I think now it's more, but no better time than now to get people to go back and kind of get themselves together and get themselves to understand all this information as we move forward.
No, most definitely, and great work covering the election, and keep up the great work, and thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Doug Weed.
Game of Thorns, always a pleasure to have you on, sir.
Thank you.
All right, now that interview is 2 years old, over 2 years. The reason in the conversation I had this weekend, but the reason I thought it's important to play today is because it answers directly the question about Russia versus China. Remember what Doug Weed said, and the perception, if not the reality, that we cannot, as a country, take on the superpower of Russia or China at the same time. You've got to select one. Well, how did this whole Russiagate scenario develop, and why? More importantly, is the why. In my investigative experience, you find motive. You find the motive. You find the people. You find the people. You find the motive, or ultimately get to the motive. And when you look at the assurance of a Clinton presidency, which is the basis for everything we're seeing right now, it has to do with Bill Clinton, at least in my view, in my assessment, selling off many secrets to the Chinese, Communist China. So, again, 2 years ago, if you could see this playing, if Doug Weed and all of us watching that, whoever might have watched that 2 years ago, could have seen where we are today, the question as to why. Why Russia? Why demonize Russia so vigorously? Well, the reason is eyes off of China. Why? Why do we have to take eyes off of China? Well, look what happened during the Clinton administration, during the 8 years of Bill Clinton with the Communist Chinese. And the other important part of this is it didn't stop. It did not stop. It carried through by way of the Clinton Foundation and right up through the 2016 presidential election. You heard the case of the restaurant, and ultimately with Charlie Tree, the fry cook, the restaurant in Arkansas, Fulin Chinese restaurant in Arkansas. So, people talk about, this Russia gate and this witch hunt, the fact that it's a witch hunt is a conspiracy theory. No. And there's, I would say, given the information just in the book Game of Thorns, and then the research done for that book, and what he said that we can all look at, that's out in the open, we can see that, no, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a course of criminal conduct that can be very easily identified. Now, again, the question would be, why bring this up now? If this is 2 years old, Clinton's not in the White House, we know pretty much what happened. Why are we relitigating this, so it seems, on air? Why today? Especially with all the other news that's out there. Because this, I would argue, this is the driving force behind all of the actions that we're seeing. And don't forget Pelosi's husband, the people who are in bed with the Communist Chinese in this country, who are in the Senate, who are in the House, who are in politics in general, former, past presidents, and the families. Look at the money in the DNC, the Democratic Party. Look at the money that has been, look at how many people have been enriched through these off-books and on-books dealings with the communist Chinese. So you have to, the answer to the question as to why, you take the focus off of China and put it on Russia. And that's the undergirding, at least in my view, which is so important, which is not being discussed much today. And Doug Weed was correct, even in 2017, the backstory behind this is not being discussed yet. This affects, this really has an impact with what President Trump is dealing with respect to North Korea and South Korea on the Korean Peninsula, the South China Islands, and all of that. And this also has to do with the actions of Pelosi and her husband, the businesses surrounding some of the people, the lobbyists in D.C., and some of the politicians and the Clintons. So that's the bottom line. And I think a lot of times we fail to remember, we forget. News comes fast and furious, pun intended, every single day. So that's why I believe it's important that we have to revisit this. So when you see, going back to the beginning of the, or near the beginning of the program, when you see reports, for example, such as how the Obama administration set in motion the Democrats' coup against Trump, the article by Lee Smith, the book by Lee Smith, titled The Plot Against the President, the true story how Congressman Devin Nunes uncovered the biggest political scandal in U.S. history. And then you go back through the timeline with Russia, Russiagate, the timeline of treason, the timeline of the coup, it becomes much clearer. The motive becomes much clearer. Why Russia? Take your eyes off of China. Don't look at China. Don't look at what we did. Don't look at what the secrets that were sold. And remember, this is an antagonistic communist country. Look at the human rights violations that are taking place in China right now. So you circle it back to, you know, the current news with respect to Comey, Brennan, being now a criminal investigation through the Attorney General's office. Now we are facing, now they are facing, a criminal investigation into the lack of predicate, the lack of reason for opening the spying into Donald Trump as a private citizen, as a presidential candidate, as a president, and right through today. So, getting back to the article here by Lee Smith, I just want to touch on this just briefly to finalize this. It reads that after Donald Trump was elected the 45th president of the United States, the operation designed to undermine his campaign transformed. It became an instrument to bring down the commander-in-chief. The coup started almost immediately after the polls closed. Now, this is kind of beginning now where the meat gets cooked here. Hillary Clinton's communications team decided within 24 hours of her concession speech to message that the election was illegitimate, that Russia had interfered to help Trump. Again, why not China? Why not Iran? Why not some other rogue country? Why Russia? Well, is there any grist for that that conspiracy theory? Well, very little. Most of it manufactured. So that's kind of the undergirding for what we're seeing with respect to the cries of illegitimacy. Yet the people today on the left, the same people who booed Trump, you know, and lock him up, are acting on information that was constructed out of whole cloth by the intelligence community. Based on over a quarter of a century of history. But anyway, I should note too on this article, Obama was working against Trump as well until the hour that he left office. His national security advisor, Susan Rice, commemorated with an email. Remember that out-the-door email? We did everything by the book. Remember that? Well, he had on January 5th, following a briefing by IC leadership on the Russian hacking during the 2016 presidential election, Obama had a brief follow-on conversation with James Comey, Saint or Cardinal Comey, as he is known now. And Sally Yates in the Oval Office, along with Biden. And remember that email saying we did everything by the book? Well, that's a CYA thing. But again, the China aspect, the China angle to me, I think is extremely important. And then the book does, or the article as well as the book, goes into boxing Donald Trump in on Russia. Obama himself adding his voice to this echo chamber as news stories alleging Trump's illicit relationship with the Kremlin multiplied in the transition period. He said that he hoped that the president-elect is also willing to stand up to Russia. Well, that kind of brings me back around to this weekend's announcement, Sunday morning's announcement. President Trump, he came out and in response to the al-Baghdadi killing, which, by the way, I'm going to thank the people who served this country in a military capacity. I'm going to thank the servicemen and women. I'm going to thank the service canines. God bless all of you. The canine that chased this pig al-Baghdadi into the back recesses of a cave, and where he blew himself to bits, whimpering and crying. The canine dog is going to lose his leg, but it's my understanding the canine dog will be okay beyond that. But I want to thank again. I want to thank our military. We've got the best military in the world, and I think President Trump really related that very well. I just want to make sure I express my appreciation, and I know all of us watching this really have a big heart and a boatload of thanks to the best of the best, our military, for doing what they did. Good night, everyone.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle. It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.